Good afternoon. This is KPTZ FM 91.9 in Port Townsend, Washington. I'm Charlie Berman sitting in for Tim Quackenbush, Bureaucracy Now. Normally we have City Manager John Morrow here every week talking about city issues. Today we have Deputy Mayor David Faber joining us. I'm going to turn up the knob and hope we can hear both of them. Hello, John.
Hey, Charlie. How are you? Good to see you.
Well, great. You know, this is my first Zoom interview, and I just, you know, they're always moving the buttons on me.
You're doing very well so far, Charlie. Okay. And welcome to Deputy Mayor Faber here, who's with us. I'm excited about that.
Okay. So we're presuming, we're just going to make a bet here that the next voice you hear will be David.
You are correct. This is David Faber. Uh-huh. I'm also joined by my dog, Layla. So if she starts moaning, please forgive me.
Well, no, I mean, you have to show, I mean, I requested that you put your bass guitar in the picture, but you know, it's not there. Layla's probably better because the radio audience can hear her. Okay, so I'm told we have about 25 minutes, which isn't a heck of a lot of time, especially since I have a list of questions that's really long. But I wanted to just get sort of a quick administrative update here about what's the latest with the new police chief.
I'm glad that people are asking because that means they care, and I'm not trying to be squirrely about it, but we're in background check with the finalist candidate, and until that comes back clean as a whistle, that'll allow us to proceed. I did note that sometime around now I'd have an answer for folks. It's going to take a little bit more time, so let's touch base next week on that, Charlie/Tim. And hopefully we'll have an update there. We won't have the full everything, but I think I want to respect the community's interest here. And if we've got enough of the background check to say, look, this looks like it's going to check out fine, then I'm prepared to make an announcement.
So we have four people in contention. Do you think you're going to narrow it down or go all the way for the next announcement?
Oh, yeah, no. The thing with background checks, especially for police chiefs, is that they're relatively expensive and very invasive. So I wouldn't want to put four people through that. At this point, it's something like $4,000 that we need to spend to actually do the required background checks. So we have a finalist, one person that I've been negotiating with. We've come to a tentative deal based on the background check and polygraph and everything coming back fine. So as long as there are no bumps in the road, we've got a new police chief in waiting.
And when do you think we would have that person in place?
Well, you know, there was not an internal candidate here as a finalist from Port Townsend. So, you know, we want to build in some transition time, obviously, for somebody relocating. What I'd like to believe is that we'll have a new chief on the ground showing up to work and leading at least by May 1st. That's kind of the current understanding. So I'll have an announcement in the next week or two. And then by May, we'll have somebody on the ground.
Yeah, I did notice that the last few police chiefs, at least the last three, came in up the ranks. And I did my own personal poll when this was announced, and the people that I thought would obviously want it didn't. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so the annual report just came out. Like many people, read about it in the PDN. I didn't go through the whole thing. But, John, what's your feeling about how that went?
Well, obviously, I've missed the mark if you didn't read the whole thing. I guess we're trying to keep it relatively concise. And no, I'm just kidding you, Charlie. I haven't had a chance to talk with Deputy Mayor Faber specifically about the report. So I'd welcome his thoughts, not just about the report, but on how the city explains how we do the work that we do. And it's actually, no surprise, there's some complicated parts to it. Some of it is hard to understand the reasons. Some of it's imposed on us from other, larger regions or states or federal requirements. So there's just a lot we're trying to unpack in a small report. My take is that at least it landed, and we're trying to open up a conversation with the community about how we run essential services, how we do democracy locally, and frankly, a few high level lessons learned. We want to be transparent and open about you know, we didn't get everything right, and nor should we really expect to if we're stretching a little bit and trying to take a few calculated risks. So especially this year, it's a year for lessons. So that might be a good segue to welcome David into the conversation.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, ask David to take the most complicated, you know, arcane part of that report and in 60 seconds explain it so everybody can understand. I'm not serious either, you know, but basically take something that people might not get and tell us why it matters.
Oh, I'm not sure I'm the best person to do that at this exact moment. not having the report in front of me and not being able to pull any of those individual pieces out. So
maybe a better question would be, what sticks out in your mind the most about this report? And
I need to pull it up.
I'll buy some time while David pulls up the report, because he's a detail-oriented guy. You know, just by way of introduction, I mean, David is our deputy mayor here, but also he chairs a transportation committee. There's a number of things that have come to his committee this past year. Some things that have been long debated, some things that are new. So, you know, a lot of those details do show up in the annual report. Kind of about halfway through, there's kind of a bulleted list of things that we've accomplished this year. A lot of those are under David's leadership on the transportation committee, for instance.
Okay. One thing that stuck out when I was reading the PDN piece, you know, because I don't read things, I just read, you know, digests of things. Partnerships prevail but can slow things down. Well-executed partnerships like the ICG allow officials to handle complex issues, but that working together takes extra time and effort from officials. And my question is, so what? What's the alternative?
Yeah, I mean, Charlie, you've nailed it. There isn't an alternative. I think what we're trying to say in that annual report is, look, we actually sometimes, I don't want to slow down. I'm kind of a speed guy. I want to get things done. But if we go too quickly, we can trip over ourselves. And I think one of the things we try to cut corners on is really establish, and I just say generally, because we're often trying to accomplish things, is to do the investment in the relationships and to build strong partnerships with other agencies. And I'm not saying this wasn't done before, because it clearly was. But the investment we've made, particularly with the county, the port, and the PUD over the last year, has been one of those things that has slowed us down, because we've had to have bigger conversations, not just with David and his colleagues for 7 decision makers, but 16 elected members around the same table. And you know, more meetings, more detail. But what that's done is it's allowed us to actually make better progress, particularly on that recovery and resilience action plan, than we would have done if we raced that after it ourselves.
Yeah, but people want it now. I mean, I want my vaccination now. I want this now. I want you to fix this problem, because you're government and you should do it quickly. So you're fighting some attitudes here.
Yes.
David.
And yeah, I also, with regard to that collaboration piece, which I'm glad that was something that was pulled out just now. You know, we've long had a history of city and county conflict, or at least not working well together. And that being a major focus of the last year, especially in the middle of a crisis, and not wasting the opportunity that the crisis provided, to give the different jurisdictions a great opportunity to work together. And, you know, there's been bumps along the way, but it is slowing some of the process down in some ways, but it also is going to probably pay dividends in the long run by having a more cooperative collection of local governments.
Sure, but I mean, And I'll just step out in my, you know, analyst hat, which means I'm just going to blow something out there that maybe has no basis in truth. But I got the feeling that County Administrator Philip Morley and City Manager David Timmons didn't really like each other that much. So
those are the exact kind of things that David and I are really eager to comment publicly about.
I know that you can't really react to that, you know. Gee, John, do you like Philip Morley? You know,
I'll say two things. One, I was like, of course I do. He's a very likable guy.
Yeah, sure.
But can I also say that some of this is situational? You know, there is a necessary tension between agencies around what we're chartered to do. And so, you know, it really helps to have administrators that I highly respect as people. So not just Philip, but also Aaron Berg at the Port and Kevin Street at the PUD. It really helps grease the wheels when we actually get along as people. But our institutions have to come up against a little bit of conflict from time to time, and that's built in. And so, you know, I don't want to reflect personally about Philip and David in the past, but the city and county have sometimes very conflicting aims, and it has nothing to do with David or Philip.
Well, yeah, and I want to say that it's just something I picked up. I never saw anyone acting spitefully or unprofessionally or anything like that. But, you know, it's just something that I felt. And it's always, you know, better if you like somebody that you're working with. I don't know.
Yes.
So yeah, who don't you like? David.
Yeah.
So last week the discussion was with Michelle about perhaps you know, city councilors, you're practically volunteers, and she suggested that perhaps you should receive a larger salary. Now, I know that's a huge can of worms, and you know, I can't imagine the tsunami of public antagonism that would cause. But how would you do that if you wanted to better compensate city council members?
Well, there's a couple different ways under the law to institute a change to council compensation. I think the pathway that seems to be getting the most interest is actually convening a board or committee of local residents to hear the facts about the rate of compensation, the amount of work involved, and to make the decision for us. And we just have to accept whatever the decision happens to be. So that creates you know, some arm's length relationship between the council and what they're being paid on the one hand, and then two, directly gives the community the control over that question. So that's the way I think I would like to see that go forward.
So I'm not positive. It's about four grand a month you get, is that? No, I don't know. I actually don't know. So tell me.
Oh wow, it's $500 a month.
$500 a month. Okay. Now the commissioners, and again, I'm a little rusty, but I think they receive in the 70s, 80s, you know, annually, and that is certainly living wage. But you know, you could increase the council salary significantly, and you'd still have to be doing something else. Because you're not going to pay $760,000 salaries, right?
Well, right, and I think that there's important distinctions between exactly how much work is necessarily involved with council versus the county commission. I mean, there's no question that the council members are called on to participate in a lot of meetings and phone calls with constituents and emails and additional reading and so forth around doing the role. I wouldn't say that it would be reasonable to ask to pay us at the same rate as county commissioners by any means, because it isn't at the same level of work. But it's true to say that right now we're being paid less than minimum wage based on the number of hours it takes to really do a decent job as a council member.
Yeah, but y'all knew that coming in, right?
Absolutely. I mean, I knew that coming in. But the fact of the matter is, if we want a representative government that where people who aren't don't have a significantly comfortable earning capacity outside of council, if we want people from all walks of life to feel like they can take the time and put energy into serving on council, we need to make sure that we're not asking too much of them.
Yeah, but we are, and I say this with all sincerity because it's, you know, you probably would pull me out on this, but we're really fortunate enough to have two practicing attorneys on our board. I'm not sure about the disposition of, I know Michelle certainly works hard, and but I can't go down the line on the others. I don't know. Is there anybody on there who's actually retired or who does not have another job?
I don't think currently we have a single fully retired person on council. We have quasi-retirement, but I don't think right now anyone's currently fully retired. And, you know, as far as I'm concerned, you know, my personal compensation for council, I mean, as you mentioned, I am a practicing lawyer here in Port Townsend, Jefferson County. You know, I'm not hurting because I'm not being paid more on council. But the idea here is that I know some members of council who are and who may feel like they can't run in the future because they can't afford to, you know, to continue serving and being spread so thin. So,
but then there's also people who are, well, you know, in their 30s, and you ran in your early 30s, as did Amy, but that was kind of an anomaly after a while. I mean, you were the first, you know, young people on the council, you know, since a long time, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, with Chris Nelson, whose seat I ended up occupying after she had retired, you know, she ran, I think she was in her late 30s when she got on council originally.
Well, when I got here, I mean, she was 44 and she was the baby of the group.
Right.
Yeah.
Now we have three out of seven who are in our 30s.
Well, that's still pretty. I mean, I you know, I guess you need a balance. But so I know that last year or 2019, you were going to be mayor and then you weren't because of family issues. And Michelle is retiring, I guess, at the end of this term. So that kind of sets you up to be mayor. Is that going to happen?
That is a decision that's going to yet be made by the members of the council.
Well,
we'll see how that shakes out.
Do you want the job?
If I'm being honest, the answer is, well, part of me, you know, there's always an ego involved, and there's something to be said for, you know, wanting to be able to satisfy that side of, you know, professional, you know, advancement. But at the same time, the answer is I don't really want the position at this point in time, but I will do it if that is the will of the council.
Yeah, well, I guess you would really, don't you all like send out little signals saying, well, I'd be interested kind of stuff? I mean, it's not just cold when you get up at that meeting and I nominate David Faber for mayor, right?
No, I mean, it's, you know, thinking back to when I was first getting onto council, there was a lot of sort of pushing that Deb was going to be the likely person to be mayor. I think I'm probably viewed in that fashion at this moment. But at the same time, if we were in a position where someone else was well positioned to serve in that role, I certainly wouldn't be demanding that I take that role.
Yeah, I remember one meeting where I guess it was either it was probably David King and was going to be mayor, but then Bob Gray goes, I nominate Chris Nelson, and Chris goes, hell no, I don't want it. You know, in an open meeting, which I thought was really strange to nominate for someone for mayor and not let them know. It was just kind of.
I think that happened last time as well.
Really?
When Michelle was made mayor, I can't remember the precise ins and outs of it, but there was something like that as well.
Huh. Yeah, I didn't go to a lot of meetings anymore. Okay, so we have about 6 minutes, and I have kind of a semi-softball here.
That's a shocker from you, Charlie.
Right. Well, you know. I pitched on my softball team for Jack Anderson Enterprises when I was in D.C., and I pitched to two United States senators, and one of them was Patrick Leahy.
Oh, wow. So, yeah. As he was my senator for a while when I was living in Vermont and going to university there.
Right.
So
the other one was Harrison Schmidt from New Mexico, and I pitched to him, and then he lost the reelection. Okay.
So you're still going strong. And I will say, Charlie, even if it's a softball, I think you've got some spin on it.
Yeah, right. No spitballs here. We got a new president about a month ago. a lot of changes, but I'm wondering what the change administration does for local municipalities, specifically us, but you could just sort of theorize about how the new administration will change our lives on the local level.
Well, one obvious change will be the emphasis on state and local aid in the $1.9 trillion COVID relief package that's currently wending its way through Congress. That was a major sticking point during the prior administration and during Republican control of the Senate, basically wanting to make sure that there wasn't any kind of state and local aid in the second relief bill. And so that's one major change. We have much, at the local level, a much more apparent and obvious partner in the White House and in the Senate and House majorities.
Yeah, I think that's clearly, that's probably the big thing. And frankly, that's something that I know Mayor Sandoval and I are talking with Senator Murray's staff next week about. It's something that, you know, I've chatted with Congressman Kilmer about recently, because he's been trying to be that champion here for the district and actually getting local aid through some of those packages in the previous administration unsuccessfully. So I know that our congressional delegation is very interested in helping as they can. And what that means on the ground could be anything. I mean, it's not necessarily just COVID relief money, although that's kind of the first focus out of the gate. You know, how we get, and I'll just go full circle back to the ICG and why we work with partners is, you know, if we're lined up with smart, future thinking, shovel ready projects, and we've already done that work locally on what we'll, you know, support each other to do, we're out of the gates pretty quickly. And so it's no surprise that effort to galvanize some support around CRF funding in the first go and to kind of align our priorities is going to hopefully serve us in the coming months as new packages are announced, not just this $1.9 trillion, but I expect, you know, some degree of stimulus funding around infrastructure and that kind of thing as well.
Yeah, I kind of felt this way for a while when I started covering local government in Kitsap County, is that David Faber and people like him have more about my life than Jay Inslee and people like him. Now, I came up with that theory before COVID, but it just seems that the local people are, you know, more significant in terms of affecting our lives here.
In some respects, for sure, that's definitely the case. Yeah, in other respects, less so, but yeah.
Certainly more accessible. And if you look at levels of trust in government, you know, the further you go up to the federal level, and not just in this last administration, but the less trust you have overall, because probably there's a disconnection between what actually happens on the ground and understanding if it's got federal or state ties to it. And I think that brings us back to the annual report. We need to tell a story about why we do things, how it's done, and how people can participate so that they can build a working awareness of those links and actually use the 7 elected representatives we have here in a way where they can make their needs known.
Okay, so we're that's it for Bureaucracy Now. I just want to observe one thing here, that when I moved here several years ago, we had several white guys named David. We had David King, David Sullivan, David Engel, David Timmons. You know, you're the last David standing.
It feels great. Great.
Yeah. How are you going to use all that power, man?
I have a lot of David power right now.
There's a lot of Goliaths out there, Charlie, and we're still sizing him up right now. Yeah, so we need Deputy Mayor Faber to be in his best health right now, because need him.
Let's give him a slingshot. Okay, well, we're actually got a few minutes of Keith Jarrett, and then everybody can. And thank you, gentlemen, for joining me and not walking away when I ask the snarky questions.
Thanks, Charlie. That was a very brilliant first Zoom interview. Thank you.
See you guys.
Thanks, Charlie.